Hello, and welcome to the teacher edition of the Steve Barkley Ponders Out Loud podcast. The complexity of teaching is both challenging and rewarding. And my curiosity is piqued whenever I explore with teachers the multiple pathways for facilitating student engagement in the exciting world of learning. This podcast looks to serve teachers as they motivate, coach, and support their learners. Promoting student character traits for thriving rather than striving. Our guest today is Deborah Farmer Chris. She posted an article with this title, Striving or Thriving, Steps to Help Kids Find Balance and Purpose, and it caught my attention. I contacted her and asked her if she'd join us here, and she agreed. Deborah is a author, often featured in NPR's Mind Shift and PBS Kids for Parents. She's also a workshop presenter for both teachers and for parents. So welcome, Deborah.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm wondering if we can start with why the focus on balance and purpose.
So the title Thriving versus Striving is one I borrow from my dear friend, Michelle Borba, who has been a leader in this field of character education for years. She's an educational psychologist. And thriving, which really goes back to that kind of Greek sense of flourishing, right? This, what does it mean to live a life where we're flourishing versus striving, which if you walk into almost any middle and high school, you see a lot of amazing kids who are striving to do well. And they are striving to get good grades. And they are striving to do the things we're telling them to do to get themselves ready for college. But you do not see them thriving emotionally or psychologically. They are exhausted. They are tired. They are stressed. Not everyone's stressed, but they're dealing with some chronic stress issues and not feeling like they have the support. And so one of the things that, you know, Michelle has done that I have interviewed her about is to begin to look at these character traits that help us move from striving more toward thriving. And there's one piece of data that I just can't get out of my head. And it was looked at by Challenge Success out of Stanford University, where they interviewed thousands of parents and high school students in high-achieving school districts. Now, these students are actually at the highest risk for psychological difficulties right now. And she basically asked the parents, what do you value most? What do you want for your child? And they gave those great answers. I want my kids to be happy and to, you know, basically thrive. But they asked the students, what do you think your parents value most? And they said, getting a good grades, getting into a good college, you know, the basically checklists. And so when you see that gap, what you have a recipe for is kids who are doing the check marks, but don't know why, other than the next thing, the next thing, the next thing. And that's not the recipe for lifelong thriving. And so this idea of purpose and having a sense of doing things you care about, that you believe in, that you feel curious about, this really contributes to a sense of not only confidence, but optimism for the future. And so, you know, some of the things that give us a sense of purpose are doing things we truly care about. And what you discover is that a lot of kids, when they get up to high school, the things they love doing in elementary school and middle school, their hobbies, their passions, they're not doing them anymore. And they're not because they don't have time. But what they're losing along the way, what by replacing it by what club should I join and what internship should I take over the summer, is that connection to that deeper sense of purpose. And that, as parents and educators, we can step back and help them tap back into that, ask them those questions, those motivational interviews of what really gets them excited and encourage them to pursue that. That is a great thing for mental health.
You triggered an earlier podcast that I recorded with two authors who had written an article titled The Dark Side of Rigor. And they talked about parents having the misconception of what rigor was in a high school program, which was a lot of work to do, versus rigor being a depth of engagement that was probably driven more by interest and curiosity and the opportunity to step back. And what I was just connecting that as I was listening to you now with the difference there.
Yeah. No, it's true. And one of the things I always loved about teaching upper elementary and middle school is that these kids were so connected often to that sense of what got them excited. And if they weren't excited about something, helping steer them toward, like, I could be the observer and notice that they seem to really be getting into blank. Maybe they'd like to try Scratch because they really like how things are organized. And so, you know, or I can draw upon their interest of statistics, you know, with math to really kind of fuel and help them make those connections. That, it seems, you know, that sounds like great for elementary, but oh, but then in high school, they have to have this course load. But when you look at the great learners and discoverers and entrepreneurs and thinkers, they're excited about ideas. I mean, I had a chance to interview Dr. Keltner from the Greater Good Science Center at Berkeley, and his research on awe is truly awe-inspiring. But, you know, he really looks at that, you know, some of the greatest transformational thinkers of our time are just deeply curious and they follow it. And the sense of purpose you can get from just really allowing yourself to be taken in by the beauty of whether it's basketball statistics or the natural world or the story you're working on or the beauty of code, if a child who likes coding, isn't that what we want for them, you know, when they are done with school and are trying to find this career that's hopefully an intersection of what they care about and does good in the world and allows them to be self-sufficient as well.
In the article that I read, you talked about seven different traits connected to being able to flourish as adults.
Yeah.
And you and I had a little chat and we picked three of them that we said we'd deal with in the podcast. So they were optimism, curiosity, and integrity. So yeah. Jump in there, any place you'd like to start, and let's take a look at each of those.
So optimism is not rooted in just happy think. Optimism is the sense that you are feeling like the future has something, that has something beautiful, even if right now you're struggling. And so if you are really struggling with something personally or even with academically, but you have optimism, and that can be rooted in the support system you have. It can be rooted in hearing stories from other people and your family about how they overcame things. They have a sense of this trajectory that life has its ups and downs and its struggles, but that it is a meaningful, good life despite it or even because of it. That's really key. So a big piece of optimism, I believe in families, is actually storytelling. And it's sharing the stories that we have and our family has and people we know who have been through challenges and how they worked through them and what they created in their life. I actually just finished reading Susan Cain's Bittersweet for an article, and I interviewed her recently. And it's all about the sense that optimism isn't about thinking life will be perfect. It's about thinking that life will be meaningful in all of its beautiful messiness. So that's optimism.
Stories sounds like a piece that teachers could be tackling tasks to have kids explore those both within their families and outside.
Yeah, and not only that, telling the stories of people in your field who have gone through challenges. There's this wonderful research out of Columbia about kids and their perceptions of scientists. And often they think scientists are just born being good scientists. And so they had one group of students read just basic stories about discoveries, but they had another group of students read about scientists' struggles, either because of discrimination of race or gender or in poverty or just difficulty and, you know, failure after failure. And those who read about scientists' struggles, that changed their self-perception of themselves as scientists, and it contributed. So these stories you bring to the classroom, right? So it's, they don't think that, oh, you know, I'm just not a math person. To show them the mathematicians who have wrestled for years with beautiful problems. These stories of struggle actually create optimism because it's that sense of I'm not alone, and that just because it doesn't come easily doesn't mean it's not worth doing.
So curiosity or integrity, which one do you want to do next?
I'll just briefly jump into curiosity. And I just want to connect that to the sense of awe and wonder, because awe and curiosity are deeply connected. And this, you know, when I asked Dr. Keltner about his research on awe, he said, you know, a big piece of awe, which is antithetical to much of schooling, is slowing down. It's paying attention. It's wandering. It's, you have your class outside and you say, let's take a look at this really closely. It's putting the painting, or that one line of poetry that inspires awe in you and letting them explore it in depth. So it's not so much about the breadth of coverage, but that depth that allows kids to wonder and to ask big questions without just thinking about, am I going to be questioned about this on a test? And it turns out that curiosity, of course, has great academic outcomes, but it also has good mental health outcomes. That when we, even people who are elderly, who are go on awe walks once a week and just pay attention to what's out there in nature, the bird sounds, that contributes to mental health. And I just think about the times where I just knew my students needed to go outside, and we went outside and read aloud. And being out there and pausing to look at the clouds, how quickly that was a refreshing activity that brought a sense of closeness and community, but also was recharging, I think, the curiosity batteries for kids.
What, with the part you just said there, I heard great reflection for teachers on it, as I'm thinking back over the month, where did awe occur? And yeah. If I can't name some, it would drive me to be looking for something that I need to create as an opportunity. I can't make the awe happen, right?
No,
but I need
you
to create the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, you know, it's almost become, you provide almost the gateway to awe, right? And so if you can even ask the end of a unit, what inspired your awe or curiosity? Like, what was the thing that you learned that created a spark for you? Or, you know, in teaching English, I'd often say, I want you to go back and highlight one sentence in last night's reading that you found beautiful or interesting or provoking for some reason. Let's start class that way. Let's start with what piqued your curiosity, because that's an authentic discussion that I'm not pulling their, you know, pulling teeth. They're bringing it because it's authentic. And what I discovered is by the end of class, they had covered everything I wanted to cover, but it was from them, not from me. And so tapping into your students' curiosity is actually tapping into their motivation.
And the one we got left is integrity.
Yeah, integrity is more than honesty, I think, is just what I want to leave you with. I think we talk about academic integrity and we think, okay, that means that they're not cheating and they're not plagiarizing. And that's important. But when you think about why some kids are cheating and plagiarizing, really good kids who are smart kids who don't necessarily need it. And by smart, I mean they're driven in that way, right? Like they could do this. But if they're being told so often that the most important thing is the good grades, then, you know, virtues and values are often in conflict with each other, right? I mean, it's like, do I be honest or am I compassionate about what the dress looks like when my mom says, how do I look? And often we pick the one we feel like in that moment supersedes the other one. And so if they feel like getting those amazing grades supersedes just borrowing a couple of answers from a friend, what we want with integrity really comes from this idea of a sense of wholeness, like an integer, a whole number, being authentically themselves. It's much easier for them to be authentically themselves if we allow them to be. You know, if we realize that authentically pursuing some of their interests might mean they're not a straight A student, and that's okay. Because maybe after school, they are working on a community farm because they love doing it. And maybe that means there's not quite as much time for homework, and we're not going to punish them for that because we are looking at the whole picture and that balance. And so if we allow them to kind of bring their authenticity and we get curious about it, then it's much easier for them to have that integrity that we really want for them.
So reading your article and now listening to you today, that word authentic gets hit quite a bit. Mm-hmm. You want to just give us a little bit more around that? I could imagine inviting people into my classroom to look for it, for it in the kids and look for it in me. So talk a little bit more about the power of that word.
I think part of it comes from who's doing the pushing and the pulling, right? So if you have students, and sometimes you see these just students who are doing everything right, but there's no spark. I think about the scene from Runaway Bride, which is not a great movie, but she's left a lot of people at the altar, and she realized, somebody asked her one day, how do you like your eggs? And she realizes she doesn't know. Because when she's with one man, she likes them scrambled. With another, it's poached. And I think we do that with our teachers. Well, who are you as a writer? I don't know. It depends on my English teacher. I morph. I turn into a chameleon based it on the needs of my teachers. And I worry about that when I teach, right? Are they acting this way and responding this way just to please me? Or am I making room for questions they have that may not fit my curriculum? Am I making space for them to bring insights that I didn't put in the lesson plan? Am I making space for those awe moments? Am I paying attention to when they come in and they're feeling, you know, they're just not looking quite their same exuberant self, right? Am I telling them, I notice this, I notice that, because kids love to be seen. And I think that phrase, I noticed, from, you know, I noticed you seem really interested in blank, you know, to I noticed that you have done a lot of extra help with your family this last week, and I know that's probably been tiring. That is just such an invitation for them to bring their authentic self to class and know that it's a safe place to learn and to grow and to flourish.
Interesting. My wife's an elementary counselor, and over the weekend, her school had a international fair, and I attended with her, and we were, you know, walking around. But every time she noticed kids, that she let them know she noticed them, I could see the impact on the student. And
they light up.
Yeah.
They light up when they're seen. You know, Susan David, who I just love, and I've had a chance to interview several times, she wrote the book Emotional Agility. She's a Harvard-based psychologist. But she says, in her notice, native South Africa, the Zulu greeting is Sawubona, which means quite literally, I see you. And I feel like that is such an appropriate greeting for adolescents who are struggling. It's not expecting them to be any one way. It's saying, I see you, and that, and I'm glad you're here. And so I think about that as a teacher too, is when a student walks in late, like, what does my face say? Does my face say, I can't believe you're late again? Or does my face say, I'm glad you're here? And they're reading us, right? And so if they read us and they see that my face lights up with, I'm glad you're here, I can talk to them later about why they're late. But if the first thing they feel is a sense like, teacher's mad, she's shaming me, there's a shutdown instantly. And so what we communicate in our body language, all of that, these are things that allow students to develop that optimism, that curiosity, because we make space for them.
So earlier today, I recorded another podcast with a principal trainer coach, and he was sharing questions that we should be asking kids at the end of the year to gather data for ourselves, self-reflection for the kids, but gather data for ourselves to be thinking about. And as I've listened to you now, I'm going to go back and touch base with him, because I think I got another great question to add. He posted a list of 20 that people could start with. But wouldn't it be great to be asked kids, when was your authentic self in the classroom? Or when did you feel most authentic in this course? And if we could get the kids to pause and think about that, their responses, I think, could tell us a whole lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's such a big piece of school and classroom culture to say, you know, what is my agenda for the kids? And am I making room within that for them to explore, have integrity, develop their confidence, have moments of awe, allow their curiosity and their questions? Because, you know, when we're not in the classroom, when they're on their own, those are the very traits that we want them to have.
Well, Deborah, thank you so much. I'm wondering if you just share with teachers listening in here some resources that they can find by touching base with you and the best way for them to go about doing that.
Sure. So my website is parenthood365.com because much of my work is parent education. But within that, they are going to find all of my articles, links to MindShift, which is the NPR education blog, to PBS Kids if they are teaching younger ones. And so that's just kind of a central gathering spot for a lot of different resources that I have.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for listening in, folks. I'd love to hear what you're pondering. You can find me on Twitter at Steve Barkley or send me your questions and find my videos and blogs at barkleypd.com.